This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. There has been much said and written about the passing of Pope Francis earlier this week on Easter Monday. He was 88 years old. What's been most widely noted is that Francis was the first non-European head of the Roman Catholic Church in more than a millennium, and that he was the first Latin American pope. Pope Francis also held the distinction of being the first Jesuit pope. Here to talk about what that means and why it matters, especially in St. Louis, a city with deep cultural and religious ties to the Catholic Church, is Father Thomas Flowers, Assistant Professor of Ignatian Formation at St. Louis University. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, my condolences on the passing of the pope.
Thank you.
Father Flowers, what was on your mind when you heard the news earlier this week of his passing?
Yeah, it was funny because it was both expected and unexpected, in the sense that we had, you know, a few months ago, we knew that he was very ill and it seemed like he might have passed then, he might have died then. But on the other hand, I, like a lot of people, was not expecting it at all when I woke up in the morning on Monday. And it was, so first it was a shock, and then, you know, his papacy has meant a lot to a lot of us, and so it was something that was with great sadness and also great gratitude for his service.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, there's been a lot of coverage of the Pope's passing, and our conversation today is going to focus on what it meant for Pope Francis to be the first Jesuit priest. St. Louis University is a Jesuit university. Can you sort of establish for us what Jesuit means?
Sure. So the Jesuits are a religious order, meaning that they're a group of priests and brothers who serve the church. And so Jesuit priests are priests like any other priest, but we have a particular kind of way of serving, and we live together in communities, and it's like other groups, like the Franciscans and the Dominicans. It's a group with a particular spirit, a particular way of serving.
Yeah, what is the history of the Jesuits, which is also known as the Society of Jesus?
Mm-hmm. So it was founded in 1540 during the time of the Protestant Reformation and the Renaissance and other things like that, by Saint Ignatius of Loyola. And really, the impetus for founding the Jesuits from St. Ignatius was he felt like there was a need in the church to serve in ways that wasn't happening. He wanted to be able to serve people, to reach people who weren't being reached. He looked at sort of problems that were going on in the church, corruption, other things like that, and he said, we need learned priests who can go anywhere and do anything that the church needs. Mm-hmm. And so that was his idea.
Yeah. What is your sense of, you know, why it took so long for a Jesuit to be elected pope? You know, was there resistance historically to the idea?
There haven't, you know, most popes have not been part of any religious order, so not been part of any group. Most of them have been what we would call the diocesan clergy, the regular priests who staff parishes and all this sort of thing. So I don't know the numbers for other religious orders, but a lot of religious orders have not had very many. So that's one thing. You know, the Jesuits also, we actually specifically seek not to take positions of power in the church. It's actually a promise that you make at your final vows as a Jesuit. And so in that respect, it's not that surprising that we wouldn't hold a position like that.
Yeah. So how did Pope Francis then
sure.
square that part of you know, the vows that are taken with, you know, becoming the highest authority of the Roman Catholic Church?
Right. Yeah. So the key is that you don't seek these offices. Sometimes you're asked to have them. And also the Jesuits have a strong tie to the papacy in obedience. We have a particular connection to the papacy where we promise that we will be obedient for whatever missions the Pope sends individual Jesuits or the Jesuits as a whole on. And so a lot of Jesuits, when they're asked to, when Jesuits have been asked to be bishops and other things like that, their response is one of their great devotion and obedience to the church. They feel like this is perhaps the best service that they can render in that space. And I think that's how Francis felt when he was named the when he was named a bishop in Argentina.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a recollection of when the announcement was made that Pope Francis would be the Pope? Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was very strange. I was teaching at a high school in California. And so the white smoke went up at the end of one period, and the name was announced at the end of the next period. So I knew for about an hour, and we were sort of watching the television coverage with my students. I personally didn't even know that there were any Jesuits in the conclave, in the group that were possible. Mm-hmm. So when they named him, I had no idea who he was. I heard the name, and then I was looking at news stories live in front of my class, and I saw that it said that he was a Jesuit, and I literally said in front of the class, Jorge Mario Bergoglio, and he's a Jesuit, with just kind of shock. And so I was very surprised. And then the second surprise came when he came out on the balcony. So many people have talked about the way he carried himself in that moment, mm-hmm. was with sort of a humility and a simplicity that immediately I thought to myself, well, I don't know who this is, but I know he's a Jesuit, and I know that this is different, that this is different from other moments like this.
Mm-hmm. So Pope Francis, you know, a Jesuit, he focused on several things during his papacy, including climate change, mm-hmm. advocacy of migrants and refugees, and inclusion. So starting with climate change, Father mm-hmm. Flowers, how did focusing on action around climate change align with Francis's being a Jesuit?
So I mentioned that at the founding of the order, the idea was we want to serve where other people aren't serving. It was really Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, had this idea that we want to serve where the need is greatest in the church. And he had sort of a way of sort of his devotion, in fact, to the papacy came out of, well, this is the person who's going to be able to look at the world and see where the greatest needs are, where are things not being met. And the idea was, as Jesuits, we'll go to the places other people don't want to go or can't go, and serve needs that aren't being served. Mm-hmm. So really a lot of Francis's priorities as Pope were rooted in that sort of vision. Where is the need greatest? And he is somebody who listened very attentively to advisors and to ordinary people. And I think his movement in terms of climate change was really focused on, he saw this is a tremendous need that's affecting the whole world, and that's affecting the poorest and most marginalized people the most. Mm-hmm. And he said, we need to address this because this is something that we're not doing a good enough job on. There's a great need here. Mm-hmm. And so he saw that. And the same thing with refugees. He saw that problem continuing to grow and to grow. And he said, this is a need, and we're not focusing on this the way that we should.
Mm-hmm. Where are those places that needed to be served in that way and where others would not go or mm-hmm. were reluctant to go?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, the ones that you name are some of them, right? The church had a stance in terms of ecology and was already serving migrants, but sort of bringing more attention to them was very important. Francis was very concerned about people who felt, who were on the margins of the church, both non-Catholics, but also people who felt distant from the church. He wanted to encounter people who felt like they didn't feel, who didn't feel at home in the church. And that was very important to him, that people knew that God's love is inclusive, that's expansive. And I think that was something that was very important to him, how to proclaim that expansiveness.
Mm-hmm. On the point of migrants and refugees and advocating on their behalf, Pope Francis sharply rebuked the Trump administration around its immigration policy. How is that specifically reflective of Jesuit teaching?
Sure. So the Superior General of the Jesuits from the 60s until the beginning of the 1980s was Pedro Arrupe. And he, looking at what the needs of the church were, he founded toward the end of his time during his time as general, he founded Jesuit Refugee Services. So we founded a worldwide network that still exists this day and that runs education in refugee camps and advocacy for migrants in this country and in many, many countries all throughout the world. And so Pope Francis was raised in that awareness, starting from the Superior General when he was a young priest, about of being attentive to the needs of migrants. And that's been a real priority and remains a very important priority in the Jesuits today.
Mm-hmm. And you noted those who were marginalized. Mm-hmm. And when it came to LGBTQ people, Pope Francis was asked a question about gay priests in 2013, and he famously responded then, "Who am I to judge?" And then later, he authorized the blessing of same-sex couples. How does that disposition align or not with Jesuit teachings?
Mm-hmm. You know, what it really is fundamentally rooted in and is this: Jesuits have a really strong sense of encounter, that you want to encounter reality and the person in front of you as they are. And that's something that that Francis was so good at. And it's rooted in Catholic teaching. It's not different from Catholic teaching, but it's a particular way of looking. Jesuits want to start with, who is this person and what are their needs? Where is their brokenness? Where can they be cared for where they're not being cared for? How can they be listened to if they're not being listened to? And that's kind of the bedrock principle, that question, who am I to judge? It's not really a doctrinal question. It's really a question about people. And Francis was always interested in the person in front of him, whether that was a reporter or a person in the square. He always was looking at that person and trying to listen to them and love them and respect them.
Mm-hmm. Are there any ways in which, you know, Jesuit teachings might have influenced Pope Francis, but he didn't quite, you know, go there? That is, you know, are there other ways that the Jesuit perspective on the papacy, you know, may have influenced the church?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think one of the things is that he gained a perspective as Pope that he couldn't have possibly had as a Jesuit. He gained a perspective that I don't have. When Ignatius saw the papacy and when he founded the order, his thought was, well, the Pope's going to have the most universal perspective. He's going to be able to tell us things that we don't know because he's going to talk to people all over the world mm-hmm. in ways that we can't. And so in some ways, he gained perspective that I don't have, and I know Jesuits who have had dealings with him who will say, you know, that in fact they had to learn from him things that when they were impatient with him on something or they wanted something more from him, they had to listen to him and say, oh, he's listening to a much wider selection of the faithful and of the world than I am, and that changes you. But that's a fundamentally Jesuit thing, to listen mm-hmm. first, and right. I think he embodied that very well.
What do you, when you're teaching, uh-huh. for instance, what do you mark as Pope Francis's greatest accomplishments, if that's the right way to put that?
Yeah, it's a funny word for a papacy. You're right to question the accomplishment. But, you know, I think that, you know, his very first kind of what they sometimes call the roadmap of his papacy was a text that he wrote called Evangelii Gaudium, The Joy of the Gospel. It's called an apostolic exhortation. It's very early on in his papacy. But even that very phrase, the joy of the gospel, that's really what he embodied more than anything else. And he had this phrase in it that's always been very dear to me, where he talked about the need to look at people with loving attentiveness. And I think that beyond anything that he did in terms of individual decisions, policy decisions, I'm not the expert on all those things, but I think that what he embodied in his papacy and perhaps his greatest legacy was reminding people of that fundamental joy of the gospel and reminding people that we believe in a God and we are a church that looks at people with loving attentiveness and wants to meet them where they are and care for their needs.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you had mentioned diocesan priests, and we should be clear, most priests are diocesan priests in that they don't belong to a specific order. For Pope Francis to have been a Jesuit and to be the leader of all Catholics, regardless of whether they belong to an order or not, is there anything on that count that you feel he uniquely sort of contributed something to the Catholic Church?
Sure. You know, I sometimes make the joke, I used to make the joke when people would ask me, was I happy that there was a Jesuit Pope? I'd say, well, if I didn't think the Jesuits contributed something positive to the church, I wouldn't be doing this. This is in the sense that I wasn't a Jesuit before, you know, for the first part of my life, I went to a diocesan parish. And, you know, so the thing is that Jesuits are we're trying to serve the whole church. Mm-hmm. And we, yes, we think we bring something particular to it, but what we bring is more than anything else, an availability to serve the needs that we see with sort of with an intellect and attention and a care that we're formed in. And I think that's what he brought more than anything.
Yeah. Pope Francis appointed the majority that is of current cardinals.
Right.
How might that have a continued or lasting effect on the church?
I mean, it will. Obviously, no one knows. I don't know who will be the next pope. But I think that what is very clear is that he increased the diversity, geographic and otherwise, of the group of cardinals. And so they're going to have a slightly different face with a much wider perspective on the world and the needs of the church than in previous conclaves. And that I can only see that as being for the good of caring for the whole church and the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other lasting effects that you can see his papacy having?
I think that his openness and his care, as I've said before, mm-hmm. are kind of the things that are going to be most remembered about him. And in that sense, that he was always willing to not to start from ideas, but to start from reality and mm-hmm. to start from people, not from sort of categories. And
right.
I think that helped to challenge and to encourage us to do the same.
Yeah, in encounter,
exactly.
As you said.
Yeah.
Pope Francis's funeral is on Saturday, mm-hmm. and then the conclave, the process that will select a new pope, will start soon thereafter. Now, this is a big question.
Sure.
And the Catholic Church is, of course, it is a global church. But in your view, what does the church need now, especially as rates of Catholicism continue to decline in parts of the world, including here in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'd like to just say that it's above my pay grade, so to speak, and,
sure.
and pass on the question. But
rewards in heaven.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I mean, I think that what the church needs, I mean, in some ways the church needs what it always needs, in the sense that the church needs someone who not only believes deeply but knows how to communicate that this is good news. You know, that word gospel, right, means good news.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the way that people look at the church and they don't see that embodied. But that, I think, more than anything else, is to be able to proclaim to the world and to people who have fallen away that this is good news, what we believe, and that all people are welcome in this church. I think those are probably the two most important things.
Mm-hmm. What pieces of joy will you be remembering and sort of carrying with you through this time, of course, of mourning, but also mm-hmm. welcoming in whoever the next pope will be?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many moments from his papacy that moved me, and most of them were kind of moments of encounter. He was coming out of the hospital in 2023, and he stopped to comfort this couple who had just lost their child, and all these sorts of things. Those are the kind of moments I take forward.
Thomas Flowers is an assistant professor of Ignatian Formation at St. Louis University. Father Flowers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.